Chapter 7. By the time Amreel and I got up to the surface again, it was well after midnight. We'd spent the entire day in the gloom, but I felt the information we'd gathered was worth every second. But now, I just wanted to get inside the trailer, shower, and fall into bed with Ibsith's arms wrapped around me. Tomorrow I could consider the implications of the attacks in the gloom, and Ersinger's involvement with them. Amreel and I came up from the tunnels, and the Zinkari woman still carried the bag of mysterious crystals in her hand. The horned woman had mentioned that the shards of crystal possessed some value, if one knew how to properly prepare them, but I was too exhausted to ask more about them right now. "Let's get inside and get some sleep," I rumbled. "I wonder if Ibsith is still up." My question was answered as soon as we came out of the growth of lilacs that surrounded the entrance to the tunnels, and I saw my beautiful, elven wife in the kitchen window as she was washing dishes. Her long white hair was falling gently over her shoulders, and a worried frown marred her heart-shaped face. The moment the back porch light was triggered by our movements, I watched the blue-skinned woman look up, and a wide, happy smile bloomed on her face. Within moments, the violet-eyed woman was running out of the back door, and then she leaped into my arms and almost knocked me over in her enthusiasm. "I missed you too," I chuckled as I squeezed her against me.
"I am so glad you are home, my king,"
Ibsith squealed as she started to kiss my cheeks, neck, and forehead. "Shh," I gently hissed before I kissed my wife back. "The neighbors will hear you, but I'm glad we're home too. Let's get inside and we'll tell you all about it." Ibsith released me only to throw her arms around Amreela to welcome her home too. The horned woman accepted this spirited elf's affection with a resigned sigh, but I could see the small smile around the corners of Amreela's mouth and knew her irritation was only an act. Once we got in the house, took off all of our gear, and set the burlap bag and my backpack in a corner, I sat on the couch with Ibsith while Amreela took a seat in my grandfather's old chair.
"Was your trip successful?"
Ibsith asked brightly, and she curled up next to me on the couch like a cat curling up in a sunbeam.
"Reasonably,"
the red-skinned woman said in a wry tone. "We found out a lot," I added cautiously, since I knew the topic of her half-brother always upset the elven woman. "Ersinger is still looking for you, but there's no sign he's any closer to figuring out you're here on the surface with me."
"That's good,"
Ibsith said in a quiet voice, but her eyes were downcast now, and her grip on my arm tightened. This was the blue-skinned woman's usual reaction whenever Ersinger's name was said. I knew it was difficult for her to talk about, but she needed to know what was going on, since so much of it revolved around her.
"He has men all over the Eni territory,"
Amreela went on.
"But it's clear he thinks you're in the gloom, or maybe in the twilight region. Thank the gods I am not,"
the white-haired woman said with a shudder.
"But is that all you found out? You were gone for such a long time."
"Well," I said as I put a comforting arm around her, "we also took a chance to explore some of the tunnels on the surface side of the iron door. Turns out there's more than one way into the gloom."
"Really?"
Ibsith said with wide eyes, and she looked from the Zinkari woman to me.
"It is well secured,"
the horned woman nodded.
"There are several traps leading up to it, plus an iron door identical to the one that leads to the Great Forest. But this second door led to the Dolrath territory, which is why I think it was even more secure, since there's an entrance to the Twilight region within that section of the gloom." "That's interesting,"
the elven woman said in a thoughtful voice.
"I wonder if that means there is a third door leading to the Karadu territory. If there is,"
Amreela interjected,
"it would be buried very deep in the tunnels. The Karadu territory lies to the east of the Eni lands and the northeast of the Dolrath, not to mention it is further down into the earth than the Eni territory."
I tried to map it out in my head as Amreela described the geography of the gloom, but mapping it out in three dimensions was difficult without a 3D rendering program. I had drawn a basic map of the portion of the Eni lands I'd seen so far, and would probably make one up for the Dolrath territory once we had explored more of it too, but trying to account for distance, direction, and depths on paper was mind-bending.
"We also encountered a lesser demon in the Dolrath territory,"
the red-skinned woman continued.
"What?"
Ibsith sat up a little straighter, and I could feel her body tense next to me.
"It's not completely unheard of,"
Amreela replied with a shrug.
"But the thing was nowhere near the entrance into the Twilight region. It was very strange. Why have the Dolrath not dealt with it?"
Ibsith demanded with a concerned expression. "I'd guess they don't know it's there," I said as I rubbed at my chin. "We think Ersinger might have found a way to coax the fucker out of its usual haunt and has it attacking people. One of Amreela's contacts seems to think your half-brother is trying to scare the other tribes into joining him."
With just one lesser demon?
The blue-skinned woman scoffed.
They can be fierce, depending on their abilities, but it would take more than a lesser demon to frighten the other tribes, especially the Dolrath. They are renowned warriors. It could be more than one,
Amrila said as she sleepily stretched in the armchair and yawned.
The attacks are supposedly happening all over the gloom.
We can talk about it more in the morning. I sighed as I felt a wave of tiredness sweep over me. It's not a problem we're going to solve tonight.
There is wisdom in what you say, my love,
Ibsith said in a quiet voice. I could tell the conversation had bothered her, but the elven woman never liked to talk about her half-brother or life before I'd saved her in that meadow. I wondered sometimes if she just wanted to forget her life before coming to live with me. But there were times, like now, when I could tell she still cared about the people of the gloom. After a shower and a change of clothes, I laid in my bed next to my gorgeous wife and just listened to her gentle breathing. I thought about the shadowy lesser demon again, and something about even the memory of the creature made my skin crawl. From the look of the dead gnomes, the monster was capable of inflicting an incredible amount of damage, and I definitely didn't want to be caught unprepared by that bastard. Then I thought about the expansive network of tunnels that led to my backyard. I hadn't even started to explore the northern section of the tunnels, and my mind turned over the idea of how best to secure the passageways before a thought hit me. It was a brief memory of Ibsith looking up through the kitchen window and smiling when the back porch light had kicked on, triggered by Amrila and me coming up to the door. What if I rigged something like that up in the tunnels leading up to the door in the lilac bushes, strategically placed floodlights connected to motion detectors to blind anything that came up out of the gloom? I could also add a few alarms to sound in the house when the floodlights were triggered. I still didn't think it was likely anyone in the gloom knew how to get to the surface, but there was no way to be sure. If there was more than one of the iron doors, there could easily be one or more other keys, and now that I'd seen the lesser demon, it felt all the more important to at least have an early warning system in place, in case anything ever did get through. And if my headlamp was enough to turn the shadow creature away, then a big-ass floodlight would fuck up its whole day. I fell asleep to thoughts of running wires and rigging up spotlights to wash the tunnels with light and reduce the decaying wretch of a demon to dust. I didn't know if that was how it all worked, but it was an entertaining thought all the same. The next morning, Ibsith hummed to herself happily while frying up eggs and sausage, and Amrila nursed her second cup of coffee in the morning. Meanwhile, I sat on my laptop looking up field cameras, motion sensors, and floodlights. It wasn't just the shadow creature I was thinking about. The night elves or anyone else who lived in the gloom would be sensitive to light. I'd seen the blacksmith dwarf in Bermshire using fire, but even the brightest flames in the underground world were relatively dim compared to the powerful lights I was looking at online. Even a regular human would have trouble adjusting to that amount of light after the darkness of the gloom. But if Ursinger ever did manage to get some of his men in the tunnel, the alarm would sound in the house, and the lights would slow them down enough for me to decide how to best respond to them before they got anywhere near the surface. The only question left was the best way to power the whole thing. I could run the electricity through the house, but it could be expensive. I was a pretty rich man now, but I worried about running cables that far. I'd have to dig a trench to make it less obvious. But then my neighbors would notice me digging a trench, so I thought of adding a solar panel or two in the corner of the yard that connected down to some car or lithium batteries. The batteries could store power for a while, and I could use power from the house as a backup if needed. I turned on my phone and did a few hours of research online. Finally, I ordered what I thought would work from a company in Texas that specialized in remote lighting and alarm stuff to keep wild pigs away from farmlands, and I paid a little extra for expedited shipping. Having an early warning system and some deterrence in place would help to put my mind at ease, and getting some physical traps could be good too. The southern tunnel already had some traps, but Amrila and I had set off the wall spikes, so they were useless now unless I could figure out how to reset them. It was another thing on my mental to-do list to consider. The rest of the day was spent in a kind of domestic bliss. Ibsith wore a little sundress with blue and purple flowers on it today, and she moved from room to room in the trailer while she cleaned and fussed over me. Meanwhile, Amrila and I put some newspapers down on the coffee table, and I taught the half-demon how to break down and clean our growing collection of guns and rifles. There was something incredibly meditative about breaking a gun down into its respective parts, cleaning them, and then putting them all back together again. and despite being easily bored with most menial tasks, Amrila seemed to enjoy the process and picked it up surprisingly quickly. After she was done cleaning, my white-haired wife came and sat down in the armchair to watch us, and she listened to her beloved country records while smiling at Amrila and I in an adorable, self-satisfied way. I knew Ibsith was thinking this was another step on the road to Amrila becoming my second wife, but I kept my expression and actions decidedly neutral. The Zinkari woman and I had flirted before, and Amrila made it clear that she was into me. But when Ibsith started to push the idea of marriage and babies, I could tell it freaked the horned woman out a little. But I was a patient man. As much as I wanted the red-skinned beauty, I could wait for her to come around to the idea. After all, she was still here living with us. Over the next several days, my new and admittedly improvised tunnel security system started to come in. Each night, I took the boxes down into the round chamber at the bottom of the entrance ladder, since I didn't have much storage room in the double wide, and I wanted to avoid making a dozen trips down into the tunnels in one day, since it might catch the attention of my nosy neighbors. I unpacked and arranged the different items with my headlamp on, and I cataloged the floodlights, cameras, and motion detectors as I planned out the best way to place them in the tunnels. I wanted the alarm in the house to go off as soon as possible. The floodlights would have to go closer to the tunnels near the iron door as well, but it would take an unreasonable amount of wire to run electricity all that way. Lastly, I couldn't place the cameras too close to the floodlights, otherwise the video would be too washed out to see whatever had set off the motion sensors. Once everything had come in, I woke up the next morning, got my tools together, and started for the back door. I planned to spend the rest of the day in the tunnels rigging everything up, but as I put my hand on the trailer's door handle, I decided to grab my Glock and put the holster on my belt, just in case. The instructions for the setup were pretty straightforward and included diagrams to connect the solar panel to a converter that went into a battery and the cameras and lights. But I still read them through 3 times to make sure I wouldn't mess anything up. Then I started setting up the solar panel in a discreet area in the yard, not far from the entrance in the bushes. It was the place that got the most uninterrupted sunlight, but would still be hard to notice if someone just looked over my fence. Once everything was in place, I ran some wire down into the first chamber by the ladder, where I planned on putting the battery, and got that set up. It was tedious work drilling metal brackets into stone walls, running the wires in the most sensible way possible, and then getting the floodlights and cameras out and put together, so I had plenty of time to think while I worked on getting everything rigged up. I still had no idea how to get at Ursinger. I'd never even met or seen the man, but as long as he was alive and in power, Ibsith couldn't be truly safe. Thankfully, there were also others in the gloom who didn't much care for the mad Night Elf chief, and I could use this to my advantage. If Ursinger was involved with the attacks and was in fact driving fucking demons to attack the other tribes, I could potentially make allies of the Karardu and the Dolrath. Between them and the resistance in the Yeni territory, Ursinger might now have a problem. Then I caught myself as I was screwing together a stand for one of the floodlights, and I realized I was essentially planning a revolution to overthrow an elven king in an underground fantasy world. The fact that this was my life now felt completely surreal. Also, I didn't necessarily have to be at the center of Ursinger's downfall, but I could definitely sow the seeds for it. But the idea of being the one to take down the man who tortured Ibsith and to tell her that he was dead and gone did have a certain appeal to me. Once the lights were mounted, and I was happy with their arrangement, I hooked them up and tested the motion sensor. It clicked on as I waved my hand a couple of yards away, and the floodlight damn near blinded me after hours of working in the dim light of my headlamp. Perfect. Next, I moved on to the cameras. The ones included in the kit plugged right into the lights and then used a GSM cell phone antenna to send alerts and video footage to my phone. I hooked up the cameras and focused mostly on the southern and eastern tunnels, where I knew there were entrances into the gloom, and then I plugged the antenna wire in, ran it up to the top of the ladder, and attached it to the backside of the tunnel cover so the little dish was pointed at the sky. As I worked, I thought again of the shadow creature and wondered how or if it would appear on a camera. The very words lesser demon sent a chill down my spine. It implied the existence of greater demons, and I had no desire to meet one of them. When we first met, Amrila told me she was half-demon, and she'd also explained the rumors that Ursinger had possibly made a pact with a demon lord to gain power. I'd heard the words, but never really processed their implications before. The Zinkari woman, a half-demon herself, scoffed at the idea that Ursinger was in league with a demon lord, but after everything I'd seen in the gloom, it didn't seem so outlandish to me anymore. Suddenly, the small sound of a pebble falling to the ground echoed from down the tunnel I was working in. I was in the southern portion of the cave network, but still nowhere near the southern iron door. I looked up, and the beam of my headlamp shone down to where the tunnel curved to the left and caught the movement of something darting deeper down the passageway. Whatever it was, it had moved toward the tunnels where the lost dwarf architecture was, toward the southern iron door. Motherfucker! I slowly stood with my hand resting on my Glock, which I was suddenly very glad I'd brought. Then I took several silent steps toward the place where the tunnel curved to the left, inhaled sharply, and whipped around the corner to look down the tunnel where the small figure had disappeared. I caught a glimpse of movement again as the figure darted around another corner further down. This time, I got a slightly better look and saw it was 3.5, maybe 4 feet tall, and wrapped in a dark cloak or something. The hem of the cloak fluttered around the corner behind the figure, and I burst into a sprint to catch whoever or whatever it was that was in my tunnel. What the fuck was it? Had something come up and out of the gloom? Did it live down here? Were there others? I chased the thing through the tunnels and into the finished corridors the lost dwarves had left behind, but the figure didn't go down the corridors that led to the iron door. Instead, it turned down a side passage, and I followed it through rooms with echoing parquet floors, with intricate designs and huge support pillars carved to look like trees, or with strange designs etched into them. None of the rooms had any furniture or artifacts left in them, though. They were all large, empty chambers with their purposes long forgotten. The small figure was shockingly fast, and it stayed far enough ahead of me that I would only catch a quick, furtive movement or swish of its cloak as it rounded a corner. Finally, it got far enough ahead that I lost it altogether. God damn it! I panted as I slowed to a stop. My heart was racing, both from the exertion and from the thought that whatever that thing was, it was just in the tunnels without me knowing about it. I was in a room with blue tiles and several deep recesses in the ground with small grates in their bottoms. I guessed this might have been a bathhouse at some point, but there was no way to be sure. I walked around the chamber and looked through the doorways leading off into other rooms, but I didn't see any further movements or signs of the figure I'd been chasing. Shit. I looked around the blue chamber again as I caught my breath. I was pretty deep into the complex of rooms and chambers I assumed the lost dwarves had made. The collar of the tile was a magnificent cerulean, but it was lost on me at the moment. There was something in the tunnels, and I'd lost it. As I started to make my way back to find the tunnels I'd started in, I wondered how much it would cost to get some bear traps to place down here, because I sure as fuck wasn't going to wait around for whatever the hooded figure had been doing to find its way into my backyard.